Well, thank you very much for the introduction and for the invitation and opportunity to speak here. Everything I'm going to explain is joint work with Vitas Paskunas. So so I want to consider the following question, well, which one could ask in some generality, but I'll be in a specific case where we can say something, which is, suppose I have some rho bar taking GQ integral to FP bar. P will be a prime, which for well-known reasons to do with my co-author will be at least 5. And then this rho bar, we'll assume, is irreducible and, in fact, modular, which I guess is now the same as odd. But I'm really going to work in the context of modularity, so sort of, for me, more natural to really think it's modular. And we can look at, so I can look at the deformation space of rho bar, where I want to have a fixed tame level, and an unrestricted at P. And so this Galois deformation space, it's spec T, where T is an appropriate Hecker algebra. Well, at least under some assumptions, maybe Taylor-Wiles type assumptions, Berkeley was able to combine sort of Taylor-Wiles modularity arguments and Gavea Mazur infinite Fern arguments to show that, in fact, this unrestricted deformation space is a space of p-adic modular forms. And so I'm going to come back to this Hecker algebra later on, but it's but right now I'll tell you it's three-dimensional over ZP bar. A two-dimensional kind of avatar of it appeared in Joel's talk yesterday. So Joel yesterday had a two-dimensional complete local ring over FP bar, which is a certain quotient of this T. So this T is a Katz, it's a Katz sort of p-adic Hecker algebra. And I'm not going to discuss the assumptions where that equality is true, because in fact everything I'm going to do is going to be about spec T, which is, again, where Vitas and I are going to be working. And in any case, it's where, I mean, if what we do does have any applications, they're likely to be of interest somehow in spec T anyway. So what kind of questions do we want to address? We want to address the density of various types of points in X rho bar. Well, in particular, well, X rho bar is a formal scheme, but it has original analytic generic fiber, which is where all the characteristic zero lifts of rho bar live. And so we want to look at various types, different types of points inside X rho bar N, and understand their density. So when I say types here, I first of all mean in the just, you know, everyday English sense, but then I also will mean in the more specific Galois theoretic sense. So what we mean here is certain points characterized by local properties at P. So what are some sort of known facts? So the rho lifting rho bar which are crystalline at P. They're dense in X rho bar. And rows in rho bar, which are potentially Bahr-Soddy-Tate at P, are also dense in X rho bar. So these two facts are probably more familiar phrased in terms of modular forms. So the tech algebra T, or the space of p-adic modular forms, can be constructed by taking a limit in the weight, or in the level. So if we look at all weight 2 modular forms that are varying p power level, this Heck algebra T will act faithfully on all those forms, because we can construct all the p-adic modular forms as somehow limits of those forms. And weight 2 but arbitrary level will give potentially Bahr-Soddy-Tate deformations of rho bar. Or another way to make p-adic modular forms is to, say, fix the level to be the prime to p level, but let the weight of the modular forms be arbitrary. And then those are also acted on, all those modular forms of level prime to p but fixed but varying weight. T acts faithfully on the collection of all of those. And they give you representations which are crystalline at p, but of arbitrary Hodge-Tate weight. So those are also dense in X rho bar. So questions of dense, if you kind of look at various different rho bars with, you know, various local properties, kind of questions of density of those points is sort of related to how much the kind of analogous modular forms fill out the whole space of p-adic modular forms. And at least for me, that's kind of the interest of this question. So I should say that there's also, they're analogous local questions, which, for example, played a role in the construction of the p-adic local Langlands correspondence. For example, density of crystalline points in a local deformation space was an important tool in Pierre Colmez's construction of the local Langlands correspondence. And in a local context, he was the one who drew our attention to these kind of questions. But I'm going to mainly dwell on the global context here, just because it's maybe slightly closer to my heart. But I'll mention the local context when it comes up later as well. So what would we like to do? Well, somehow it's not immediately clear to me how you would strengthen the first statement up here, because we're saying crystalline, and then we have to let the weight vary. If we fix the weight, we're talking about level prime, fixed tame level modular forms of a fixed weight, and there's only finitely many eigenforms there, so they can't be dense in a three-dimensional space. So you have to somehow let the weight vary in the first point. But in the second point, there's certainly room for improvement, because a priori we don't have any control over this potential. So if we're looking at weight 2 modular forms at arbitrary p power level, they give Galois representations that come from p divisible groups, but over kind of arbitrarily ramified extensions of QP, and one could try and control that ramification. So that's the sort of technical meaning of the term type. So just recall that if rho is, so let me for a moment be a two-dimensional, potentially semi-stable representation of GQP, then Fontaine's theory lets us make the potentially stable the Donnet module of rho, which has a Frobenius and a monodromy operator and a filtration after an appropriate extension of scalars. And you can sort of throw away the filtration and remember what's left after you throw away the filtration, and you get a Vedelin representation attached to Rho, which, so this Vedelin representation remembers that potentially. Yes. Plus. Exactly. So there's a finite action of Galois, which is again related to the potentially part of, is related to where the thing becomes essentially semi-stable. So this Vedelin representation just essentially throws away the kind of, it throws away the stuff that comes from semi-stable and just remembers the stuff that comes from potentially, more or less. And so, in particular, we can restrict this to the inertia group at P. And now that's really just remembering as a two-dimensional representation of the inertia group with finite image, which is just remembering what extension of QP we had to make in order for our potentially semi-stable representation to actually become semi-stable. So this is called the type, maybe sometimes called the Galois type, or sometimes people call it the inertial type. And so, for example, if that's one example to keep in mind, is if our representation came from a finite slope modular form, but maybe with still powers of P in the level, then this would be an abelian representation of inertia. It would just be the sum of two characters. And conversely, if this was abelian, then our rho would be coming from a finite slope modular form, or a twist of a finite slope modular form. So I need to recall sort of, well, another side to this picture, because it will be used in the discussion and arguments. So this Vedelin representation, according to local Langlands, corresponds to maybe pi p rho, a smooth, irreducible representation of GL2QP. So that's the classical local Langlands correspondence, not yet the p-adic local Langlands correspondence, that's a classical one. And the basic yoga in local Langlands for GLN is that, so Vedelin representations of dimension n correspond to smooth irreducible representations of GLNQP. So it's a local Langlands correspondence of Harris and Taylor and NER. And then what does the restriction to inertia correspond to? So it corresponds to, we can take this representation of GL2QP, we can restrict it to GL2ZP, which is the maximal compact subgroup of GL2QP. And now it will break up as a direct sum of different finite dimensional irreducible representations of GL2ZP. And there'll be sort of a smallest one. In some sense, there'll be something with least conductor. So in the case of GL2, this was constructed by Henier. So inside here, we can write something that we can call tau, maybe tau sub p of rho, which is, so I'm just going to put minimal in quotes. Minimal, you can think, means minimal conductor. It's the minimal irreducible constituent. So we have this minimal, so this is a direct sum of irreducible representations of GL2ZP. We have a minimal one, minimal in the sense of its conductor. And that minimal K-type matches with this inertial type. This is sometimes called the inertial local Langlands correspondence. So for example, if this if our rho were crystalline, then this will be the trivial two-dimensional representation. This will be the trivial two-dimensional representation of inertia, and this will be an unramified principle series, which is characterized by having an invariant vector under GL2ZP, a unique one-dimensional space of invariants, And this would be that space of invariance. So it would be the trivial representation of GL2ZP. And if we were in the finite slope case, so that this was an abelian two-dimensional abelian representation, a sum of two characters, if this was a sum of two characters, well, characters of the inertia group can be thought of as characters of ZP star. So we would have two characters of ZP star, and we could use them to make an induction from the Borellian GL2ZP to GL2ZP to, I shouldn't say the Borel, I should say rather, we can do something like making an induction from the Borel, not a ZP, but a Z mod of an appropriate power of P to produce this type. And I'll come back a little bit to precisely what this would be later. So what we would like to do is improve, say, the second statement here by getting some control over these types. So the question is, can we find interesting sets of types such that the potentially Basadi-Tate row of type lying in the fixed set, so in this fixed set, this fixed interesting set, are dense. Well, I mean, it's a slightly ambiguous question, but the statement there says that if we take this set of all types, then yes. So the goal is to show that this is true for some other sets of types. So maybe we can state one theorem. So the set of row, the set of potentially Basadi-Tate row, of principal series type are dense in X row. So again, principal series type, those are the ones that correspond to the case when this is abelian. So this says that if we look at the weight 2 modular forms that are finite slope or twisted finite slope, already the Hecker algebra 4-p-adic modular forms acts faithfully on those. So in fact, I'm going to sort of explain how you prove this, more or less. And the argument is pretty robust. So principal series types don't intervene really as themselves. They intervene because they're sort of a big enough set of types. So we'll see what that means, that they're big enough. And there are going to be lots of other big sets of types. So I don't think potentially Basadi-Tate has any particular relevance. We should be able to replace potentially Basadi-Tate by any fixed distinct Hodge-Tate weights. And I think that if you replace principal series by supercustodal, the result is also true. And in a way, maybe that's more interesting because I don't think that kind of thing was known before at all. But the only problem is there's a criterion for being a big enough set of types, and it involves a computation that my co-author is better at making than I am, but my co-author is also on committees and expecting a baby and so on, and so hasn't done that computation yet. But you'll see when I explain the criterion that it's sort of not a difficult criterion to check, and for those who can check it, and it's sort of a robust thing. So how are we going to prove this? Well, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there are arguments you could make using directly using the Gawa side. But I don't personally know how to make them. And so we're instead going to argue on this side, which is why I put this side on the board. So for that, we have to convert our X rho bar, which is thoroughly Gawa theoretic, into something automorphic. So we can argue kind of using automorphic notions. So for that, we have to recall now p-adic local Langlands. And in fact, p-adic global Langlands. So let me just call it p-adic Langlands. For GL2 over Q. So the rough idea, which most people here know, is that over this global deformation space, or even over the corresponding local deformation space, each row has an attached Banach space representation of GL2 QP. And as rho varies coherently over X rho bar, those Banach spaces vary coherently. And those Banach spaces encode, in a suitable way, this side of the Langlands correspondence. And in particular, you can recognize from those Banach spaces whether you can detect the type. And so what we have to do is we have a kind of parameter space of Banach spaces. So this X rho bar, some parameter space of Banach spaces, and we want to find a criterion for when it contains, when the set of Banach spaces it parameterizes, which have a particular type, we want to show a criterion for when that set is dense. So we want to be able to kind of determine, you know, when, we want to have some method for working out when kind of families of Banach spaces have, you know, so studying what kind of types they have in them and then figuring out when those sets with those different types are dense. So, okay. So what kind of, so what we want to begin with is the Banach space here. So let me sort of draw a picture. So we have spec T, which again is X, I'm thinking of the deformation space of rho bar. And now that maps to X rho bar restricted to GQP, the corresponding local deformation space. And this local deformation space, I'm going to follow the notation of Pascunas and call spec of E tilde. This is just what his notation. Maybe it's dangerous because for many people in this audience, E tilde has another meaning, but anyway, what Comez writes in a different context is what Pascunas writes in this context, and I'll get confused if I don't use it. So this is what other people might call R sub P rho bar or something like this. Sort of R sub P of rho bar restricted to GQP, the local deformation ring. Well, in fact, I should fix the determinant just because that's, again, the way that Pascunas works. So let's fix the determinant. So we'll call the determinant zeta times cyclotomic to the minus 1. So here we'll fix the determinant, which is zeta times cyclotomic to the minus 1. So in the context of modular forms, that just means fixing the Nabin-Typus, essentially. And you can just get, since P is 5, so it's certainly odd, we can just always twist ourselves into this fixed situation, so it's sort of harmless, and I'm going to ignore the technicalities it introduces. But then this is literally what Pascunas would call E tilde. And what are the dimensions? So I said that this had a dimension 3 over ZP, so it was a four-dimensional ring. One dimension was just coming from the ZP bar coefficients, and then there were three kind of parameters. But when you fix a determinant, there are two parameters. So this is two-dimensional. Sort of relatively two-dimensional, well, over ZP bar, but it's not so good technically to work with ZP bar, so I'm going to work with OL. So I'm going to Descendre bar to some finite extension KL of FP inside FP bar. And then I'm going to choose a finite extension L of QP with ring of integers OL, just so that everything is finite. So this L is sort of the same L that was in the talks of Colmes and Dospinescu. It's just some coefficient field that doesn't play any role. So this thing is of relative dimension 2 over OL. And this thing, well, a local deformation space is five-dimensional, but the determinant is a character of QP star, which has two parameters. You can talk about what happens on inertia as one parameter. You can talk about what happens on Frobenius. That's another parameter. So when we fix a determinant, we fix two parameters. So this has relative dimension. It's relatively three-dimensional over OL. So this map, for example, has image of dimension 2. Well, a priori, it could even have image perhaps of dimension 1 or 0, but in fact, it will have image of dimension 2. In fact, although we're going to prove along the way, and it's good to remember it now because it will help psychologically, this map is finite, actually. So having just canvassed a few experts, I don't think this is known, and I don't know how to prove it as a general statement in deformation theory, but we'll prove it along the way in this two-dimensional case. So, I didn't think specifically of that. I tried to just think maybe that argument, and then I kind of was wondering about Golo-Chefrovich towers of a certain kind, but maybe. But I didn't think so hard. So this finiteness, for example, means that if we have a global deformation of rho bar, and we know how it looks locally at P, it's determined up to a bounded finite number of kind of possibilities. So we have this finite map. So this is a union of some components. So I can't really draw two-dimensional things so well here, because then I'd have to be forced to draw three-dimensional things here. So let me draw this as dimension 1 and this is dimension 2. These components somehow map to these components, maybe as finite covers. So now we have to put in Banach space representations of GL2QP. So over here, there's a Banach space. Now actually, there's always a slight nuisance in sort of this p-adic local Langlands theory that there, so we already had sort of two sides, a kind of a Galois side and an holomorphic side, but on this representation theoretic side, it has two sides of its own, because you can, when you're working with classical Langlands, you're talking about smooth representations. So smooth representations have an inductive character. They're unions, from the point of view of GL2ZP, they're a direct sum of ireps, so they're a union of finite dimensional ireps of GL2ZP. So they have this kind of inductive quality. But normally in arguments, like if you do Urasawa theory, you kind of know that often in arguments it's easier to be on a dual side where things are compact. Like at least for me, ZP is easier to think about than QP mod ZP. And so in this sort of automorphic theory, you can kind of flip to a dual side where smooth things, which are kind of unions of finite dimensional reps of GL2ZP, convert into projective limits of finite dimensional reps of GL2ZP. And that has some technical advantages. So, and you can always flip back again by taking continuous duals. So I'm going to put an object here, P tilde, which is on the dual side. So this is it's a representation of GL2QP, which is a, so in particular that it's a representation of GL2ZP, but its GL2ZP structure is a little bit enhanced. It's not just a naked representation of GL2ZP, it's in fact a representation of the completed group ring of GL2ZP. and it's compact. So a priori, it's an OL module with an action of GL2QP, but it has actually a topology which makes it compact, and it has a and the GL2ZP action is given to you in an enhanced format. You're actually given a module structure over this completed grouping of GL2ZP. So one thing to say is that it's not finitely generated over this module. So it's important to say that it's compact, because the topology is helping us keep it under control. So why is it not finally generated over this GL2ZP? Well, if it were finally generated over GL2ZP, then when we suppose we fix the conductor, so suppose we fixed a particular open subgroup of GL2ZP, which would be fixing a conductor at P, and took the quotient where that acts trivially, that would be finite dimensional then. So if this were finitely generated over this, then when we when we imposed having a particular conductor, we would get something finite dimensional, which would then have finite support. And that would tell us that there were only finitely many local Galois representations with that fixed conductor. But we know that if, for example, you take the conductor to be trivial, you look at, say, crystalline representations of fixed Hodge-Tate weights, then the conductor is trivial. Then they form a one-dimensional family in here, not a finite family. So the existence of kind of positive dimensional families of crystalline representations, or potentially bisodic-tate, or rather potentially semi-stable representations of fixed type and weight, the fact that you have those positive dimensional families kind of shows you that this P tilde is not finite type over this. So I'm bringing this up because it's going to be important in what happens in a moment. So maybe we have to put it over here. So we have so here's another picture of this local space. And ooh, tricky. Okay, so I think I'm forced to actually draw it to be three-dimensional. So this three-dimensional thing is a local space, and inside it we have some curves. So this will be some potentially bisodic-tate deformation space of fixed weights and type, and it's a theorem, I guess, of Kissin in general that those are one-dimensional. And we have our, well, now I have to add one to all the dimensions in this picture to make it authentic. So the global deformation space is two-dimensional. So I have a surface, the image of the global deformation space is some surface. Maybe it's this surface. And this curve maybe passes through it at some finite number of points. But if you think about where this green curve intersects this red surface, what kind of points are we talking about? We're talking about now p-adic modular forms, which are potentially bisodic-tate of fixed type and weight. So those are p-adic modular forms that are potentially semi-stable. So by Fontaine-Mazur, they're actually classical modular forms of fixed Hodge-Tate weight. So the classical modular forms are fixed weight. And fixed type, which means they're classical modular forms of a bounded level at P. So that means that they're in a finite, you know, they're in a space of modular forms of fixed weight and level, and there's a finite number of those eigenforms. So this red space meets this green space at only finitely many points. So that's sort of an important feature of local deformation space, is that the 3 is not a naked 3. It's somehow a 1 plus 2. There's sort of, it has sort of one-dimensional aspect which reflects kind of fixed weight and type deformations. Then it has these kind of transverse two-dimensional directions which kind of reflect varying weight, which is the way global p-adic modular forms behave to make families of global Galois representations. You have to let yourself vary the weight, otherwise you can't make p-adic families. So you have kind of those kind of complementary dimensional spaces kind of sitting inside here. And so, so along here, P tilde is not finally generated over OL of GL2ZP. Again, because when we restrict P tilde to this green line, we're kind of taking a quotient where we're fixing the conductor, but that quotient still has to be, can't be finite because it's supported on this whole green line, so this must not be finitely generated over here. But what we'll see is that on here, P tilde is finitely generated over . So that's kind of a finiteness statement that will be important. And it's not just going to be finitely generated, it's going to be finitely generated and projective. So, so that's the, well, so why do I care that it's finitely generated? Well, maybe I should start with why I care that it's projective. So why do I care that this is projective? Well, if we think about the kind of automorphic picture of types, so we have to flip back from this compact side back to the smooth side. So let's do that. So then in projective will become injective. So why would I care that this thing is injective? Well, I'm trying to, over this red locus, I'm trying to find lots of points which have some fixed type, or at least have types from some fixed bag of types that I'm looking at. So how can I ever hope to put a type into this P, or into the dual of this P tilde? Well, if you have kind of a module over a ring and then you have some prescribed objects that you want to put inside, in principle, I mean, they just may not be in there. So you basically need to have a module that somehow holds everything in it. And that's what injective modules are. Right? Injective modules, you can basically just embed things into. That's the definition of injective. So we need this projectivity so that on the dual side we have injectivity, so we have a chance to put our types inside. So that's why we care about this projectivity. Why do we care about finitely generatedness? Well, because when you're working with these modules in this compact, if you don't have finite generatedness, you can never really talk about, it's very hard to literally compute statements like injectivity or projectivity. You always get in projectivity with a hat on it. You'll always get topological versions. Once you're working in the non-finite type compact situation, you'll always get topologically analogous notions, but they won't literally be the notions you want. And so to literally get the kind of projectivity that you want in the literal algebraic sense, you also need this finite generatedness statement. Otherwise, you'll be sunk. So we want this finite generatedness for kind of technical reasons to help us get the projectivity. And we want the projectivity because that's completely key to actually producing points of a given type. So how do we ever prove this statement about this P tilde? Well, we have to recall another part of p-adic Langlands. So the thing is that this red thing is inside the white box just because global Galois representations can be restricted to the local, to the deformation group. And so it gets, so you can restrict P tilde to the red thing by virtue of that map. But what's important is that that restriction has an a priori description. So we can describe P tilde, well, pull back to X rho bar I'm going to not keep writing the determinant condition. So we can describe P tilde pulled back to X row bar directly in global terms. And that way we can prove some things about it. For example, these things. So how do you do that? So well, row bars modulo, say, have tame level n. So we can look at the homology of modular curves. So write y1 of n semicolon p to the r. So this means, so here this is the tame level, so p doesn't divide n. And here I mean, I have gamma 1 n level structure, but then I add full level structure p to the r. And I take OL coefficients, and I localize at the maximal ideal attached to rho bar, and I take a projective limit. Right, so these modular curves. Are covering one another. And so I have homology here, I have homology here, homology classes push forward, so I can take the projective limit. So this is h lower 1 tilde. So what is this object? Well, it's a at level p to the r, you have an action of GL2z mod p to the r. So in the limit, you certainly have an action of, at finite level, you have an action of GL2 of z mod p to the r. So you have an action of the group ring of GL2z mod p to the r. So in the projective limit, you get an action of the projective limit of those group rings. So you certainly have an action of this. But then also in the usual story, when we take all p power levels, we get an action of actually the whole p-adic group. Sorry, this should say zp. We get an action of the whole p-adic group. So we have an action of GL2qp. We have a compatible action of the Iwasawa algebra of GL2zp. And this is, in fact, finally generated over this, essentially because cohomology is finite dimensional over, or is finitely generated over OL at any fixed level. And it's also projective. So let me just recall why it's projective. So let's so to test if it's projective, you have to check that when you hom to GL2ZP, you have to check that that's an exact functor. So it's a little bit easier now to flip back to the dual side. So check on the dual side that hom GL2ZP reps, say, sigma 2 H upper 1 to the inductive limit of H upper 1 of Y1N p to the r, let me put here, kl m rho bar. So this is, this will be a finite dimensional representation of GL2ZP over kl. Check that this is an exact functor of sigma. So this is sort of, I've dualized and I'm looking mod p. But since these are torsion-free over OL, they're p torsion-free, it's enough to check everything mod p. So I reduce my P, I go to the dual side where homology becomes cohomology, and I check an injectivity statement. And now so the point is that this hum can be described in a more direct way. Because I assumed that rho bar is irreducible, this maximal ideal is a non-Eisenstein maximal ideal. So the H naught of these modular curves vanishes when you localize at M rho bar. So this H1 is sort of an exact functor on sheaves, as long as we localize at M rho bar. And so this hum is the same as, you can kind of see, it's the same as computing the cohomology at level Y1N, sort of by Shapiro's lemma, some combination of Hochschild-Serre and Shapiro's lemma. It's the same as computing cohomology without any P in the level of some sheaf of the local system attached to sigma, localized at M rho bar. And that's an exact functor in sigma, well, because taking duals is an exact functor, sheaf of taking the sheaf is an exact functor, and then taking H1 is an exact functor when you localize at a non-Eisenstein maximal ideal. So this H1 tilde is a very nice object. And so, okay, so we have this H1 tilde, and it's a very nice object. But then the key fact is that this H1 tilde is essentially the pullback of P tilde under the map from the global space. Oh yes, thank you. H log 1 tilde is essentially the pullback of this P tilde under the map to the local deformation space. So, well, that's roughly, I mean, this essentially is more or less, I haven't been very careful with the level N, and so there could be some old forms, some kind of N old forms, but forgetting that, well, there's also actually, this has Galois representations, so it would really be the pullback of two copies of P tilde, because there's kind of a two-dimensionality coming from Galois representations. The modulo is some issue from a factor of two because of Galois representations in old forms. This is true. And that's, I guess, just sort of statement of local global compatibility between the kind of global and local p-adic Langlands, so which we have. So that tells us some things. That implies, for example, that this map is finite, among other things. And yes. I think so. What did I say? So I better assume that rho bar locally at GQ at P. I don't think this can really matter, but I better assume it has trivial endomorphisms. That's because that's literally what we have written down. Because then the theory of P tilde and E tilde becomes much simpler. If robot has non-trivial endomorphisms, the situation becomes more complicated. And in fact, I better say generic in the sense of Pascuno's. So not only trivial endomorphisms, but I want to exclude the case when an extension of trivial bicyclotomic up to a twist. So there are some local assumptions, but I don't think they're really germane to the gist of what's happening. So those local assumptions are just to kind of know a lot about E tilde and P tilde and so on. So where was I? So one complication we have is... Yeah. I mean, that's the statement somehow. Well, I mean, somehow in local global compatibility, this is really, there's a universal Galois representation, and then there's P tilde, and then there's the local Langlands away from P, which when we're at fixed level N, so that will be some old forms, some kind of p-adically interpolated space of old forms. But that don't really matter. So there's a little issue that, as I already hinted in the picture here, this thing doesn't have to be irreducible. It's probably not in general. And we want to show density of some set of points, and we want to be able to get... That means you have to show density in each component. So we would like to be able to restrict our attention to kind of a particular component. So we would like to know, in particular this projectivity, we would like to have it after we restrict to a particular component. Which is a priori slightly tricky because there's no kind of immediate commutative algebra thing that tells you when you restrict to some component that all nice properties will be preserved. But get around this. So let's in here take, say, spec A to be a component. In fact, let me call this spec B because it's going to... So we saw this map has to be finite, and so this is going to have an image which is spec A inside here. So what we're going to see is that in fact P tilde restricted to spec A is again, well, it's certainly going to be finitely generated because that's true here, it's true restricted to here, this is a finite map, it's true here. So it's finitely generated over GL2ZP. But also, it's also true that it's going to be projective. So how do you prove that? Well, the point is that this component has dimension 2. Once I fix the term, this has dimension 2. This is a finite map. The image has dimension 2. It's an irreducible component of dimension 2 in this spec of just the power series ring and three variables. So it's cut out by a single equation. So this A is some quotient of E tilde by some equation X. And so P tilde, I've already described it as kind of a Banach bundle over this spec E tilde. And technically what Peters has shown is that it's flat, sort of topologically flat over P tilde. And so we can tensor this up with P tilde, and we get a presentation of the restriction of P tilde to spec A, which is has just a zero and a one step. A presentation by flat things. And so that implies that the projective dimension of this restriction of P tilde is as a G representation is 1, at most 1. And that actually shows that it's projective over K. So you can play off projective dimensions over G and K using standard presentations. In Roberto Livni and then in Pierre Colmez's work. So we can control this Pitura on spec A. So it's projective. And so now we want to try and produce points of some type inside here. And we're going to produce points of that type that are dense inside here. And then the pre-images will be points of that type that are dense inside here. And so how do we do it? Well, so we have this Pitura restricted to spec A. So we go to the dual side, because that's a bit easier for me to think. I can think that I have this V over spec A, which is some unitary Banach space rep. I have S is some set of types. And so I can look at just, I'm going to make a subspace of V. So I'm going to look at So I'm going to look inside V at all the smooth GO2QP sub-representations of type tau. And I just sum them all up inside V. So I kind of, I mean, this could be zero, it could be huge, we don't know a priori, but I sum all those up, and I can close them up. I can complete them in the topology, Banach space topology in V, and I get a G sub-representation of V, which is measuring how much of V has all these particular types. And I want to show that this thing has full support. So we call this maybe VS. We want to show has full support. Well, good, so we have only about 2 minutes left, so that means that I can omit the gory details, which is that we have two notions of size of this VS. There's its support, which we want to show as spec A. So we want to show the support is two-dimensional. But it has another kind of internal representation theoretic notion of size. When we dualize, it dualizes back to a quotient of P tilde. And that quotient of P tilde, you can think about its support, not its support inside the deformation space. You can think about its support inside the Iwasawa algebra of GO2ZP. Well, technically, you can't do that because that Iwasawa algebra is non-commutative. But there's a dimension theory which lets you at least talk about the dimension of that support. And so the point is one can relate these two notions of dimension. So we can show that if the dual of this has big enough dimension in the Iwasawa theoretic sense, so somehow has full support on the Iwasawa algebra, then it also will have geometric support of dimension at least 2, and hence be living over all of A. And so that the good thing is when you want to compute the Iwasawa theoretic dimension, there's a nice way to do it. It's a Gelfand-Krylov type dimension. So you have to take invariance under gamma p to the n and see how that dimension of the invariance grows as n grows. But that we can do because we have a type tau and it appears inside V, and V is a GO2 representation. The pi the tau gives rise to appears, and we can compute the gamma n invariance, and they grow in a certain amount. So if our S has enough taus in it, then we can just kind of bound the size of the gamma p to the n invariance here and bound them enough to show that this VS does have full support in the orthosteric sense, and so also has full support in the geometric sense. So you just have to choose your S large enough to have the rate of growth of the sort of the gamma p to the n invariance. When you sum it up over all the taus, you have to have that rate of growth be large enough. So for example, if you take the set of all principal series types, you can do that computation. You're in good shape. And I think if you take the set of all supercustodial types, you make the same computation. I think you're also in good shape, except that I find that computation harder. So hopefully my co-author will do that. But the thing is, the principal series types are kind of easy to describe, and the pi's are parabolic inductions, and so you can just, for me, it's easy to compute, but the supercustodial side is a bit harder for me to work with. So that's the idea. So the conclusion is that there's sort of the two key kind of ingredients are sort of looking at the geometry of how the sort of global spaces and then local potentially semi-stable spaces interact in deformation space, combined with an argument that trades off Iwasawa and geometric notions of dimension. So I'll stop there. Yes? Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's pretty robust. You can certainly throw away any finite number, and you can kind of throw away some number asymptotic that doesn't sort of, yeah, like any fraction of them that's somehow less than one, you can kind of throw away. Because it's some, you just, this is a very numerical, this check is just a very numerical thing, and somehow as long as you kind of multiply it by a millionth, but not by zero, somehow you're still okay. So that's what I mean when I say it's very robust and you have a lot of flexibility in the choice. So, yeah. Yeah, so for local representations, what you can make the same argument. The first thing you have to do is you have to choose this candidate red space, which it's already in the work of Pascuna, so you can kind of just find sort of codimension one loci that are transverse to crystalline loci somehow, so the p tilde restricted Earth is finitely generated, and then you can run the same arguments. And then you can, you have a lot of flexibility in that red space, as long as you can move it any way you like, as long as you don't actually move it onto the green curve. So all its kind of rotations, they'll all together be risky dense in the whole three-dimensional box. So, yeah. No, that's purely local. I mean, this red thing, that you can construct it purely locally. I mean, it's these things that Vitas calls omega. You have to find a kind of an omega sitting as a quotient of p tilde, and he knows how to do this purely locally. Of course, if you wanted to do something with the word supercustodial types, then it wouldn't be purely local only in the sense that we would need global theorems to kind of get equivalences of various correspondences. So, yeah, so that's an interesting question, which, because related to that, the question comes up from time to time is of whether, for example, on the Eigen curve, you can exhibit, say, weight 2 points and things like this. So I think it's an interesting question, and I think pushing it even to the Eigen curve is sort of a natural push of your question, which is also interesting. And it's, I'm not so sure. I mean, I'd like to think about it, but I'm not so sure because, I mean, some of these things, somehow in a lot of these arguments, I mean, you're kind of working mod P and you're computing these side dimensions mod P, so the whole thing has a very sort of p-adic formal quality. And it's a bit hard for me to tell. I mean, that's certainly entrenched in the arguments, but it's a bit hard to tell sort of how entrenched, because it's also just somehow entrenched, I think, in our thinking. And so it's a bit hard to tell how much of it is just because of how we think and what the true obstructions are. I'm pretty confident there will be genuine obstructions to the original analytic situation, but I don't know how substantial they are. Thank you.